Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along Justin Nimmergood.
Bruce, what's going on? It's a happy Monday. For sure, after yesterday's Cowboys win.
It is. It was their fifth consecutive victory, and people down here, Justin, as you know, are ecstatic. And, you know, once the Cowboys win more than one game consecutively, they always erroneously talk about Super Bowls. But you know, Jerry's like, you like those Super Bowls, Justin. I hope you do very much. Cowboys, we have professional coaches like Justin and Bruce with the Cowboys. Maybe not, but they certainly need it. So yeah, so things are going well, and
busy week.
I have a contract to coach the Federal Public Defender's Office of the states of Wyoming and Colorado, and had the honor of being at a federal law conference. It happened to be at Fort Worth last Thursday. So showed up there in force, kind of coaching attorneys and how to interact with these clients that are headed toward federal prison, and doing basically what's called post-conviction coaching. It's
interesting.
Very interesting deal. And there's a couple of programs in federal law that allow for early release or getting back home early. And those are little known facts to the lawyers on the front end before the gavel hits. So we're letting them know on the back end some of the services that I can provide as a coach to them. To make their federal prison experience so much better. So anyway,
their federal prison experience so much better. You say that with such grace.
Oh my God! thank you, Bruce. You know, for being there and walking us through the federal prison experience. So yeah, I'm glad to do that. Here to serve, and that is
the mission, right? You know, purpose is service. You know, sure. I know you probably feel the same way. We don't do it as coaches, you know, oftentimes for the glory or for the riches. It's because it's a service, you know, purpose and service driven business or line of work, if you will. And, you know, obviously one that's very rewarding in itself and fulfilling, but not always the most glamorous, that's for sure.
Well, you know, it just, everybody's different, right? And I think for our listeners who are contemplating becoming a coach or what have you, I am the poster child for how, you know, an accumulation of expertise and experience can be packaged, right, as a coaching service line. And I know it's a little bit different from what we're going to talk about today with our guest, but it's a service line nonetheless. So, yeah, I mean, and so, Justin, what's going on in your world out there?
Yeah. So I was out of town last week. I was in, spent it in the Bay. I had a tech conference that I was helping out with, and then a analyst dinner on Thursday night. So I spent most of the week in San Francisco, which was nice, and then my lady and I had a nice little Christmas party on Saturday night. So pretty eventful week, actually. I'm just, you know, candidly today getting caught up on everything. It's been kind of a wild couple weeks as we close out the year and look into 2019, but certainly a lot to be grateful for. I'm super excited, though. We have a really exciting guest on that I can't wait to introduce, you know, everyone to today. Someone that I personally know and have known for a couple years now. And she, in addition to being a dynamic personality and a great mother, is just an absolute brilliant, I would say entrepreneur, even more than entrepreneur, I'd say leader, right? She's someone that founded, I think technically speaking, and I'll have her talk more about this, but technically speaking, is the world's first official vegan cosmetic line. And it's been around since 1998, called Amani Cosmetics, founded in Huntington Beach. Now I know they reside or have their corporate office elsewhere. I think it's in Corona now. But she's just an incredible personality, a great leader, a great mother, a brilliant mind, brilliant strategist. I love just being around her and her personality and her vibe, because she's just that soul that you can just learn so much from. And so without further ado, I'd like to introduce Michelle Doan, of founder of Amani Cosmetics, onto the show with us today. Michelle?
Oh, wow. Justin, that was quite humbling. And thank you so much for the warm welcome. I am ecstatic and completely honored to be here. It's kind of always strange to hear how people talk about what you've done and what you've accomplished. And this is something that, to me, I'm very grateful for. So thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, Michelle. We're grateful to have you. You know, so tell us. I know I probably botched up some of your intro there, but yeah, just in your own words, you know, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Personally, I am a single mom who's an entrepreneur who works really hard, and I identify there's a lot of single parents out there, whether it's a single mom or a single dad. We're constantly trying to be the best of ourselves that we can be, and not only providing a life, but creating a balance. And so this is something that it started really early for me in 1998 when I was going through a divorce, and I had some really interesting concept out of a need. And I'm just one of those things that once I grasp onto a concept that's fueled by passion, it's really hard to let go. And this is the way that I'm wired. It's quite innate. And I have had a lot of leaders that I follow and learn. So I believe in coaching. I believe in a support system that help us and propel us to the next level, wherever what that level is and whatever industry and whatever we're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you have such an interesting story, Michelle. And I think one that, you know, for whatever it's worth, that really brought me to tears, you know, when I heard it for the first time. This was a couple of weeks ago now. And if you're willing and open, obviously, yeah, to share it, I'd love for you to just share. And I think it really speaks to the genesis of why you're such an inspired leader. You know, they say, and I think a lot of what Bruce and I talk about is those that are successful, whether they're as coaches or entrepreneurs or leaders, they often have that tipping point, you know, that happens in their life, and it's usually inspired by something, you know, from early childhood, right? Yeah. In the case of you have a pretty profound story. Would you share a little bit about that or whatever you're willing to?
I'm happy to share it, because most immigrants, this is why I truly love America. And this is the land of the opportunities, right? And I know that there's a lot of things, you know, politically that's going on right now is very disheartening. But as a immigrant to this country, I'm completely grateful for it. So I'm Vietnamese descent. And, you know, the Vietnam War in 1975, a lot of us, especially Southern Vietnamese, were very unhappy. A lot of us tried to escape the country. My family is what you would have called been part of the boat people that was escaping from Vietnam. And unless, you know, when you watch things on TV, is really different unless you go through the whole journey. And I'm all about girl power, because my mother escaped Vietnam with six children. I was number five. And at the time, I was 9 years old. My oldest brother was possibly 16, 17. My youngest sibling was 2 years old. And so could you imagine leaving on a boat trying to escape the communists, and gosh know where we're going. We don't really know where we're going. And it was quite scary at the time. And you think about everything compiling to the dangers of, you know, piracy, and the boat are not equipped to carry so many passengers. So to give you an idea, on our boat was 90 foot, which is 30 meters, and it was a shipping vessel. It's a fishing vessel. And I remember even as a child, you know, at 9 years old, I can almost reach my arm over the boat and touch the water. And I remember, like, the water was so deep. It was jet black. I've never seen water that was so dark because it was so deep. And we had 319 people on this boat, and only 317 made it because two actually perished on the journey. And this is something that a lot of Vietnamese and a lot of other immigrants that have escaped their oppressed country come to. And I know that California and Texas and Louisiana and a lot of other states, we have a lot of Vietnamese immigrants. So for me to be here today is so profound in my heart and mind, and going through the refugee camp, living in squalor for about a year, and for us to live in a westernized civilization, you have no idea.
That's just astounding. And if you wouldn't mind, I remember there's a profound or distinct part of your story that I think you've still left out, which is, remember when you said you had to kind of go under the cabin, that part of the story?
Well, it was kind of funny. I travel a lot for work, and I get motion sickness a lot. So even when I fly, it's still a very nerve-wracking for me, and I fly a lot. So during the journey was actually, we left southern Vietnam, and at that time, I didn't know where we were heading, but we ended up in Thailand. And the trip was seven days. And on this trip, it's not like you can actually bring any belongings. Pretty much you can have a bag among the passengers, right? So you only have sitting room. So during a storm, they were so afraid that we were going to get washed overboard. So they would put us in the hull where would they would typically put the fish. You know, it's a fishing vessel, right? So we would try to all fit into this fishing hull so we don't get washed overboard. And I just remember during the storm and during the ocean, I don't know if any of you guys ever gone fishing and in a very stormy weather. Let's just say a lot of us actually had motion sickness and lack of a better word, we're all puking all over the place. And it was horrible. It was absolutely, absolutely horrible. And I never really discussed that. And this is why it's something that is really important to me. And so, you know, but we survived, and but we were hungry and we were starving and we were thirsty. And it was just something that kind of burned into my mind and burned into my soul, and is part of my journey. And never once did I ever feel sorry for myself, but grateful for the opportunity. And when we did land in Thailand, we couldn't even get on shore because Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, all those countries were bombarded with, you know, Vietnamese refugees that are trying to, you know, escape from the country. And we were turned away. And none of us knew how to swim because all my siblings were a little bit younger. And the issue was how to get on land, you know, when we get there. So imagine you're traveling, you know, 7 days, no food, no water, and you're getting to where you're going, and you can't even dock your boat and get your people off. So we had to wait until the middle of the night and try to swim in, because once, you know, you're on shore, you know, then it's an issue, right? Then that's their problem. So my mother was traveling with six children. My brothers could swim. All three of my brothers could swim. I didn't know how to swim. My sister didn't know how to swim. She was only two, and my other brother was four or five. And she was running around begging people to, especially gentlemen who are traveling alone, they could put us on their back and swim us into shore. And that's exactly what happened. And matter of fact, those gentlemen that helped us swim to shore are still in touch and being friends with my mom. And it's been probably 38, 40 years now.
Wow. Wow. What a story, you know, and I just love that story as, I mean, it's not only a story about hope, you know, and just kind of triumph. It's, it's really, if you think about it, it's a great formulation of that burning fire, which I'm sure you'll talk about, you know, that can catapult someone to just create an absolute empire, right? So, so talk about, if you would, just a little bit about then what, right? So you come to America, you know, obviously in this voyage, let's call it, right? And dire circumstances, to say the least. And then what, right? How did you know, like, what you wanted to do? And how did you come up with this brilliant idea, you know, for a business? And can you just kind of talk us through some of those
items? Yeah, so basically, I'm Canadian, by the way, still. But California has been my home since 1985. Please don't do the math because it's super old. So when we landed in camp, and we were there for almost a year, and the only way that the U.S. government, we couldn't apply immigrate to the U.S. because they told my mother that there is no way a seamstress could support six children in the United States. So my mother decided to apply for Canada because it was the closest to the United States. And then we'll figure it out how we're going to make it happen, because we had family and relatives that lived in York, Pennsylvania, which is my uncle. And so eventually my mother came to California and remarried. And a few of us actually came out here. And so this is how I end up in California. And It's kind of interesting, because when we think about, like, how are entrepreneurs made, you know, and this is a really big question and topic for me. Is it an innate thing, or is this something that you can learn to become an entrepreneur? And I almost feel like it's almost an innate. Entrepreneurs that you speak to, and among some of my friends, always have this desire and this pull that I couldn't understand when I was much younger, right? And it's this drive and this pull that pulling you to something. When I was younger, I didn't know where all this energy comes from, and I wanted to create, right? And everyone is wired so differently. And this is actually my third business. My first business, I was 19 years old. And I was a designer, and I created handbags and fashion clothing. My mother was in manufacturing, so it seems like it was the right way to do it. And she's the one that got me into fashion design. And this is a start where the birth of Imani. Imani, the vegan cosmetics, is actually designed for women with the most sensitive skin. And I'll go back to, like, where my childhood was and how I grew up. And there's a lot of peer pressure. You know, when you're 12, 13, you know, or starting high school, I don't know if you ever walk down the hall and that you see kids, you know, with a lot of acne and pimples. Right. And, you know, sometimes
I remember it distinctly. And you know, unfortunately, you kind of have those weird feelings. And I tried not to be one that would pick on them. But you certainly, you know, you looked at them different. It's hard not to.
They get picked on. So I was one of those kids. I had a lot of acne. And you know, and it affects you, because especially for a girl, I think, you know, not saying that for a teen boy going through it, it's not as profound as a girl, because a girl, we're so much more sensitive about our looks, I think. And having, you know, sometimes they call you pizza face, or they look at you as if, you know, you have poor personal hygiene. And matter of fact, it was quite opposite. I was scrubbing my skin. I was doing everything that I could possibly have, not just to have acne. So imagine from 15 to 27, I had cystic acne. So for 12 years, I spent a lot of the time, a lot of my youth actually going to doctors and dermatologists and trying to find a solution. And it's not because anything I did, it was quite genetic. And actually my children have acne, right? And but it was something that was really important to me, you know, how you always want something that you don't have. And what I didn't have was good skin. I'm not talking about phenomenal skin. I'm just talking about normal skin that doesn't have any breakouts. And I was in the fashion business. And in the fashion business, as you know, it's very trendy, it's very chic. No matter what I wore, no matter how I did my hair, no matter, you know, everything looks great. I always felt ugly because my skin was what I call acne. It was ugly. It makes me felt ugly. And the more makeup I put on, the worse I broke out. And a lot of, I think a lot of teens and a lot of people actually identify. If you have, you know, sensitive acne skin and you want to look pretty, it's a very hard solution because all of the makeup, especially this was in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, formulations, ingredients, is not as advanced where it is today. And so that was a very trying time for us. And so that has implanted, and I felt really helpless as a consumer. And even as a patient going to see a doctor, I was on Accutane that kind of messes up my system. I was on topicals that, you know, left my skin peeling and red and sensitive. And that actually made you felt even uglier because when you're going through topicals, you can't wear makeup. You can't do a lot of right. different things. So, you know, going through that journey is how I end up starting Imani. I was actually looking for one product for myself. I was, you know, doing all of the research. And back in 96, 97, the internet wasn't really popular. It's not like now you can go and Google something or you're looking for a product. And so you had to do a lot of work yourself. So one of my favorite saying is, you know, is necessity is the mother of all invention. And that's how we came about. Yeah. So if you need something and you can't find it, there has to be something meaningful for that. You know, you gotta take a look for it because I feel like if you need something, there's a lot of people out there that need your service or need the product.
That is entrepreneurism, if you will, if that's even a word. 101,
yeah.
right?
It yeah.
is find a need or, you know, fit the need. And I love that saying, which, by the way, you know, if you check out her website, which she'll share more about at the end of the our time here, it is right core to the story of Imani. I love that, Michelle. Wonderful.
Yeah. And, you know, one of those things that, you know, when we started with a brand and when you started with a company, you know, I'm really big about purpose and mission, right? As you know, there are lots and lots of cosmetic companies. So here I am out of Huntington Beach, California, you know, a single mother going through a divorce. And I literally had $14,000 because my mom sold a factory and she's like, hey, you know what? I'm moving back to Canada and you've been working for me. And she was my sole income. I was working for her and all of that. So basically she said, look, I'm going to move back. Here's $14,000. And I'm really sorry, but you're always welcome to move back to Canada with me.
Thanks, Mom.
and so those are really trying times. It's like you there's a point where you get to a point of your life where you're like, okay, what am I going to do? Because the next step that I take is going to really determine where I'm going, right? And as you know, any entrepreneur that, you know, that is listening or any entrepreneur that you talk to, the road to success is full of bumps. And so, and this is where, you know, 20 years now actually have made me such a stronger person. than I am. And I actually feel like I found myself going through this journey. And every single day, I'm blessed for the headaches and the victories that I experience.
Just a fabulous story. I love that. And you can tell why, folks, you know, it was an easy choice to invite her on to our show here today, because, you know, with a story like that, it's no wonder why you've had the success you've had, right? And they often say that, again, triumph or success stories are born out of, you know, hardships, right? And mm-hmm. that clearly is the case for you. So on that note, maybe tell us a little bit about, you know, as now a call you a two season, but certainly season, right? 20 years in the mm-hmm. business, which mm-hmm. kudos to you. You've surpassed the 5-year mark where mm-hmm. a lot of businesses often fail. Mm-hmm. So you're now well in 20 years with Imani. Maybe about your most, and it could be Imani or non-Imani, by the way, but your most mm-hmm. proud accomplishment thus far.
Well, first of all, 20 years to a lot of people seems like a long time, but to me, it seems like two blinks of an eye. And it's because I think I am so, I don't want to say so wrapped in what I'm doing. I'm really passionate. I'm really excited. There are days that I do want to tear my hair out. And there are days that I'm like, I wish I can fire myself. Because I think we all have those days, and let's be realistic about it. There's a couple of things that I'm actually really, I don't want to say proud, but one of those things is learning some skills, going through this whole entire journey. And the biggest skills that I really love is actually balance. When I started Imani, I was working a lot. And, you know, when you start a company, you want to make a lot of money. You want to do a lot of sales. But for the first 3 years, Justin, I was completely miserable. And, wow. And then I said to myself, what am I really doing this for? You know, this is something I really believe in. But if I am just looking at the bottom line, and by the way, P&L is absolutely, absolutely important. But for me, it didn't work on just looking at the sales and the numbers and the markers alone. I really had to go in and say what was really important to me. And I think when you are in the game for so long and there's so many moving pieces in your business, and no matter what your business at, I didn't want to lose myself. I didn't want to lose why I started the company and what it really stands for. And so for me, it took a long time to create the work-life balance, and then also, you know, the ability to negotiate to make sure that my P&L are healthy, but also to stay true to my mission, vision, brand, building, creation. And so it's more like you are the conductor of your life. And that's my most proudest, is that, you know, I'm a better conductor of what I'm doing, right?
Yep.
And yep. Another one of my sayings, this is kind of funny, is that smooth seas never make good sailors, or something like that.
No, it's not really sailing. That's just kind of gliding through life.
Yeah. And I think, you know, going through the whole process is a learning process. I actually have a lot of saying, and one of the saying is that if you stop learning, right, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're dying. And no matter where you are in your game, whether you're in a 1 year, 5 year, 20, 30 years, I think you continuously have to grow, and you have to balance, and you have to add more tools to your repertoire.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say part of this is who you are. Do you think who you are now is different than who you were 10 years ago? And if so, how did that get reflected in your service line, in your products?
I think, you know, I'm not the same person as I started out. I think I'm a little bit more like zen and balance. Back then, I had a lot of raw energy. I had a lot of passion. And, you know, I was like, what I use this analogy. I was a race car burning out, like I'm spinning my wheels at the starting line and the smoke coming out of my wheels, right? And if I didn't get all of that harness under control, I would be going fast, but I would be going nowhere. And it's all about tempering, you know, your passion, tempering your fuel, and have a clear direction on where you're going. So
you're more refined, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. So refining your game and have a game plan, I think, is really important. Passion hasn't changed. My tools have changed. My outlook have changed. My mentality have changed. Because every single obstacle, every single no I got, every single objection I got, I came back and I thought about, okay, how can we overcome those? And those can only be, those can only be achieved through experience.
Exactly. And just like Justin was saying earlier, the cosmetics industry, hopefully I'm using the right noun there, is what seems like a really occupied competitive space.
Yeah.
How have you, tell us how you've been able to kind of keep your edge and keep, how do your products stay on the forefront and the cutting edge and maintain relevance in the market?
Is really, really difficult. Really, really difficult. First of all, is you have to we identify ourselves as a point of difference. So, I wake up every morning and I think, what can I do that's going to be different today? What can we offer that's a little bit different? So, no matter what service, product, how are we going to differentiate ourselves from the pack? What is the white space that is missing, from the industry we're in? So, and also it has to align with our company philosophy and mission, right? And so for us is that creating and building our core customer, also as a business too, when in the initial, I was so aggressive getting new customer, new distribution, right? We weren't keeping our existing customer that making sure that they're happy and they're solid, right? Because we were so pursuing new business. So my thing is that, you know, about 10 years ago, we started reverting back and making sure that all of our existing customers are absolutely happy, because happy customers will refer you to their friends and family, right?
Absolutely.
So sometimes new business is not always loyal business. So from what we do is that we learn to keep and to make sure all of our customers are happy, because I believe loyalty pays, right? It's rewarded.
Absolutely, certainly, and something that is as personal as cosmetics can be, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm going to ask this question, forgive me. Do your cosmetics have some sort of a ethnic bent to them? You know what I mean? I know.
No.
I've seen other cosmetic lines kind of cater more toward this ethnicity versus that ethnicity. But is there any sort of specialty bent that your lines cater to?
Yeah. And so, you know, when it comes to cosmetics, and especially with this type of industry, people always want to know, okay, define your market. You know, with us, I don't look at women as being different ethnics, right? So I'm Asian, so I don't really see color. It's kind of weird. I look at women, and instead of looking at the market as certain ethnics and ethnicity, I look at it, I want to create a product for women, all women, and suitable for the most sensitive skin. So that means like a lot of cosmetics out there that are really great, but they're not made for women with sensitive skin. So you're actually excluding those. And it's like for women with sensitive skin, when you go buy a product, you're like, you have to, it's like, oh my gosh, I hope it doesn't break me out. Because when you break out, we're talking about could be anywhere from a week, 2-3 weeks before the whole process of breakout and healing, right? And I'm like, that's our white space. Our white space is like, what if we eliminate that? What if we handpicked all of the ingredients? So it doesn't matter if a girl is 15 and going through a breakout and she's looking for a product that's suitable for her life. Or one of those things is that I had a grandma in her 80s and she has a lot of rosacea and she's looking for a product that works and that's function for her life. So, and yeah, when we,
I was going to say, one of my sons, I bought him a shower gel product, and I mean, it broke him out worse than chicken pox. I mean, he looked like he had a systemic reaction from hell. I mean, like you said, it took weeks. So, I mean, I know he's, you know, but anyway, yeah, you're right. That to that sensitive skin component is a huge differentiator.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to even get jumping into the GMO. Also, there's this huge thing about, you know, how our diets have really changed. Mm-hmm. And now you can see the market, you know, a lot of non-GMO and things like that. And the same thing with products and chemicals, right? So basically, it's a known fact, right, that an average woman, North American woman, uses about 5 pounds of beauty products head to toe per year, average.
Wow.
You think about, you know, body lotion, makeup, skincare, you know, conditioner, everything that women uses, you know, shaving cream, et cetera, et cetera. They're using 5 pounds of beauty products per year. An average, a woman uses about 12 products, meaning if you add those 12 products and you look at all of the chemicals, it comes out to be 128 odd chemicals, okay? Then you think about, okay, where are these chemicals coming from? We don't know where they're coming from. What is the long-term impact? And we're putting this directly onto our skin. Then it gets absorbed into our system, right? Because skin is a, you know, is a solid barrier and it's the largest organ. You guys hear about this. And when you're putting everything on your body, it absorbs into your system. So you're thinking about petrochemicals. You're talking about parabens that have already, you know, been linked to cancer. You're thinking about all of these synthetics, and you're putting and you're loading your body up with chemicals. And this is why natural organic is so big. This is the elimination and going back to living with less chemicals in your system.
Absolutely. Put it so simply, so articulate, and how important that is. I mean, I know we all try to live by that motto, but you've basically carved a niche in a very competitive space for really what I would say is a trend for many years. Not even a trend, mm-hmm. That's not the right word, but a space, you know, that's a need for many years to come, right? Refocus around, you know, health and diet and things that are healthy for us, for that matter.
I think it's like a shift. You know, I think as a woman and as a consumer, I get a little bit insulted because I feel like there's a lot of the skincare, anti-aging, you know, cosmetics that you see on TV. And I feel like it's really misleading, right? You know, they flash a beautiful woman and they flash a product and you are to buy it. But more and more, you know, women are just reading the labels to see what's in it. But, you know, there's a lot of women who just buy it because they've seen it on TV and they're not really looking at into what they're putting in their system. And two, and even for expecting moms and for people who have medical needs, like expecting moms, you know, they are advised not to get their nails done, not to get their hair dyed, not to do all of these things. Because all the chemicals actually is, you know, absorbed into your system. So you have to think about overall as an industry, you know, what are we doing? So it comes down to like ethics and values and just doing the research, right? Because research is also really expensive. This is why a lot of niche cosmetics are really growing. And I believe it was in 2016 and 17, the biggest lift as far as sales and volume are in the natural and organic skincare and products, as the traditional chemicals based type of makeup and products actually have taken a decline. And this is where the industry is really heading, because now more people are like, wow, you know, we really do need this type. And it's all about training and education and, you know, put it down to simple bite size where customers like, hey, you know what, that makes sense.
Wow. Wow. So well said too. And, you know, one of the things I respect about you, by the way, Michelle, as a leader, and you've shared this in kind of some different ways, but you know, you mentioned the publicity, right? The PR avenue, and I'm sure you guys are out there and certainly in social media and you're out there in your own PR avenues, but you won't find Imani like you said in the, you know, just seen on TV, you know, gimmicky kind of commercials or anything like that. You will find them, by the way, in some Rite Aid stores nationwide, among other places. But you've really, you know, kind of gone out, I won't call it old school, but, you know, you built this business in a magnificent way, kind of old school, door knocking, you know, getting into accounts and servicing those clients at a very high level. You know, can you maybe just talk a little bit about that and maybe, you know, hint, hint, wink, wink. I love that mother's story, if you want to share it with the listeners.
So, you know, like, I am old school. I grew up in the 80s, and I believe in that human touch, and I believe in do what you say what you do and be completely transparent, because it takes less work to be transparent than, you know, to backtrack on what you say. And I am not perfect. If I make a mistake, I will apologize for it, and I will do all I can to rectify that mistake. And that is my basic philosophy when it comes to my personal life and my business life. And we have actually been thriving as a company based upon customers' recommendations only. It's kind of, I know that people in marketing are probably going to cringe. We didn't really have a marketing budget for many, many, many years. And only recently we are actually going into social media marketing and everything like that, because we really pride ourselves in creating a lot of really great product. So instead of spending money on marketing, we actually spend money on R&D and raw materials. Right. Because I believe in the whole philosophy, like when they were rebuilding Honda and Toyota after World War II, is that if you make a really great product, right, then you will always have the customer based type of philosophy. So it starts out with really a great product. And I felt it did really take me at least 15 years to be where we're at as far as formulation, ingredients, and packaging and putting everything together. And I look at it this way. Now we're really getting ready to do some serious business, right? And Facebook social media affiliation programs has been working really well for us. We're also exporting to other countries. So we work with other partners worldwide. Europe is a huge market for us. We recently launched on QVC in Europe, Italy, France, and the UK. And it's really great to be able to come out and talk about vegan cosmetics, because when we went vegan about 10 years ago, Justin, no one knew what vegan cosmetics was. And right. I actually had hire a company, look at our branding and, you know, to change our message to make sure that the message is getting clearer, cross, and concise. And when I suggested that I want to go call our company and rebranded from, you know, Imani Cosmetics to Imani Vegan Cosmetics, they absolutely said no, because they said that it sounded a little bit extremist and that, you know, people may not understand. And only up until about 5 years ago, people are starting like, oh my God, you guys are so cool. You guys are so on trend. I'm like, we don't do it to be trendy. We do it because we solely believe in screening every single ingredient in our product and, you know, formulate the best way possible, right? And so marketing, and that's what we do, is we educate, we market through education and information and knowledge. But I think in 2019, it's going to bring some really interesting products out because we've grown leaps and bounds in formulations.
Absolutely. Yeah. And speaking of 2019, Michelle, because I know we got about 5-6 minutes left, and there was one more piece of your discussion that I really wanted the listeners to hear from, which was around your approach to sort of year-end rituals, you know, reviews, yeah, and forward planning. You know, I think perfect time to kind of share that with the listeners as we almost roll into 2019 here.
Yeah. I think you have to be really honest with yourself, and you have to be really honest where you are as your progress. Everyone have their own KPI. This time the year for me, I take a look at it as an overview, and I take a look at what works and what doesn't work, right? And you also have to give yourself some leeway. Don't beat yourself up so much about the mistakes that you've made and things that we could have done different, because hindsight, correct? I always evaluate everything as an overall, and then I break down into different sections on how we can do things better. Then it comes back to the always question, is this what I want? Is this staying with my vision and where I want to be? And then lay out a plan for next year. Okay, these are the things that we wanted to change. Get down pen to paper, get on your keyboard, start creating and almost journaling, you know, journaling your whole process of your year. And we have to be polarizing about what our success is and what we want to do. And if you had a bad year, you know what? Everyone has bad years. If you had good years, that's really great. And then you can build from that. So to me, being honest about your results and who you are and what you are, and as long as you're happy with what you're doing, you know, more to it.
Excellent. Great example. And I'm sure something that, you know, nuggets of what you just said, you know, our listeners can take from and can hopefully be inspired to take action from as we roll into 2019. This is also one of my favorite times of the year because you obviously can reflect on everything from the past year, forward planning. It's that perfect. And then obviously the holidays, you know, to top it all, it's kind of that perfect storm of all these great activities coming together into harmony and into one, you know. So I'm sure so is it always around this time then, Michelle, you know, right around December time frame, or when do you?
To be honest, is probably all year round. But it's all year round, where I'm always constantly thinking and formulating in my head, because I think if you wait until the end of the year, I think it's a little bit too much and too overwhelming. So, you know, you just have to take small bits, and there are certain things that you should start making notes. So I have a little notebook that I kind of, a digital notebook on my phone, so that I kind of create things that I want to change and things that I'm having issues and problems with, and, you know, what things are really working. But it just so happened, you know, as far as in cosmetics, December is kind of like a slow month for us because everything has already been like up until November is really, really busy. December is where we do really well, you know, online. We focus on our e-commerce business, which I'm not really, I have a team that actually runs our e-commerce business. So December allows me time to be retrospective on the year and then to start planning, because when January 2nd comes around, I will be hit the ground running.
I love that. Not going to, it will be. Very power oriented statement. I love it. Well, I know we're running up on time here. We got about a minute left, Michelle.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that the listeners can obviously find you, connect with you as a founder, and also connect with Imani. So could you just share with the listeners ways in which they can connect with Imani and you and the brand and all of the above?
Imani.com. It's spelled E-M-A-N-I, Imani. There's a man in the middle because people say, you know, what does it mean? Because it's really not in the dictionary. So man in the middle of the word Imani is, I believe that all female are as strong as our male counterpart, but it's soft and pretty. So when you go to our website, you'll see there's a little icon that looks like a flower. It's actually an E in four pillars, and the pillars are natural innovation, you know, passion and products, right? So it creates of who we are as a company. And I'm all about girl power. I love, you know, women entrepreneurs, as men as entrepreneurs as well. But I'm all about, you know, creating that. So also on Facebook and Instagram at Imani Cosmetics.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Michelle. Such a privilege, a pleasure having you on and connecting with you in this way for the past 50 minutes. We really appreciate it here at the Concierge Coaches Show. Thank you so much.
Thank
for your time
you, you both for having us. And I wish you, family, and all the listener a very, very blessed season.
Excellent. Bruce, I'll turn it back to you.
All right. I'm about ready to join the Imani Club right now.
Thanks, Bruce.
There's smoking, looking videos here. Michelle's on here, so definitely going to hit the scroll up here and not get too distracted. Folks, yeah, great. Thanks for coming on the show, Michelle. Great time. And, man, it's great that you're an innovator, that you were in the vegan space with these products way before vegan became cool. So, kudos to you and such a trailblazer. Well, folks, speaking of, you can hear this show and all our prior shows. They are cataloged and archived on the LA Talk Radio website. Also, we are on iTunes. You can hear this show and all our prior shows on iTunes, and we have paid it forward so you can download for free any of our podcast shows, and you can have that 24 hours a day. And even this show will be put on iTunes very soon after the conclusion of today. So feel free to see us on Concierge Coaches on Instagram. We also have a Facebook, the Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook. I can be reached on conciergecoach.net. And Justin, how can folks reach you?
Justin Nimmergood, J-U-S-T-I-N, Nimmergood, N-I-M-E-R-G-O-O-D. Pretty unique last name. You won't find any others out there like it. So I'm out on all social media avenues as well. Look forward to connecting with all you listeners out there.
All right, fantastic. Well, until next week, everybody, have a great December, and we'll see you here next week, same time, same channel, on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.